Hey, thanks for coming back. You are about to listen to the second of our adventurer introductions, this time focusing on Taz, the party's homegrown pyromaniac genius. Well, he thinks he is anyway. I guess we'll see how things go. We just want to say that we appreciate all of the support we've gotten during the first 2 weeks of this release. You know, it is not always an easy thing to do something like this, to put yourself out there kind of in a way that maybe isn't always comfortable. But the feedback and listens we've received have really validated that we think we're doing something interesting and cool and worthwhile. We hope you do too. Anyway, without further ado, meet Taz. We fade in. A large, red-faced man in secondhand armor can be seen dragging the body of a small goblin from a thick wooded area toward a clearing. A ragged wound in the goblin's neck still pumps warm red blood, leaving an erratic map of their path. Out of breath, the man with the red face stops, laughs to himself, and flings the lifeless form of the goblin forward. He continues into the clearing, and as he walks, we see the goblin once more, tossed onto a stack of other corpses, the bodies of his friends and family. The wound on his neck pumps no more.
Not much treasure, though.
Another man calls out. This man is darker in complexion, balding, with a scruffy beard. Around them, we see a village made of small huts, a couple of longhouses. The construction is rudimentary, though solid. The arbitrary architecture of the buildings suggests a type of civic mania. Some homes are adorned with feathers and horns from wild creatures, while others feature spikes, hanging strings of teeth, and others still are tattooed by carvings, shapes of animals and goblins and gods alike, each etched directly into the pillars and framework of the homes. In shape, their only constant is a sense of universal social disdain for utility. Some homes are sloped, some are domes, some are boxes with pitched roofs, but the majority of them are fashioned as pentagrams or interwoven tunnels or into the shape of animals into whom one's mouth one would crawl to enter. Several others feature another less appealing entrance.
Keep searching, keep searching. Boss will be cross. We can't come up with more than this.
The large red-faced man lazily tosses a few gold coins into the air.
Boss can go to whichever the hells he chooses. Don't know why we followed him out here anyway. Not even sure how he got to be in charge.
The dark-haired man calls back, approaching a small hut. It is less manic and thoughtlessly constructed than the others, though its strange geometry unsettles the eye for reasons that are not immediately apparent. He reaches his hand for the door of the hut and opens it. An explosion booms through the wilderness around, and a crimson and black vortex swirls violently to life in the sky above. From the surrounding woods, hundreds of birds take flight, calling their alarm in a confused clamor. They burst from the treetops like a swarming black cloud, whose pieces move in ways which are erratic as they are certain. Instinct-driven panic. Our gaze returns to nothing but the burning hut, blackened grass, and the charred skeleton of the dark-haired man.
Taz moves from the backside of the hut he used to call home. He knows all of the houses in this part of town by memory, and he's able to use a strange construction to find hiding places as he works his way towards the forest to the south of the settlement.
What in the hells was that?
A thin man with a handful of facial scars bellows, stumbling toward the skeleton of his late colleague. The red-faced man jogs around one hut and arrives nearly simultaneously as the man with the face scars. Though the fire is out, both stand on opposite edges of the streak of burnt grass.
I don't know. Didn't think goblins could do something like this, honest. Maybe the boss set a trap, trying to catch one. Maybe he forgot to undo it.
Oh, yeah?
Like he caught this one? The scarred-faced man says, kicking toward the charred skeleton.
Boss wants to work him, not roast him. I don't think it was him.
Once Taz makes it to the forest, he's going to find a path that he can take without too much difficulty that isn't a trail. Once he's about 100 yards away, he'll bury a charge that he's prepared and set a long fuse. As soon as it's lit, Taz will start moving through the underbrush as quickly as he can, trying to make it to the opposite side of the village. The common house is there and the largest building in the village. If there are survivors, Taz hopes they're being held there.
The atmosphere booms again as a pillar of black smoke rises from the forest. We cut to the men in the village. Each of their attention is pulled toward the source of the noise. Several begin running immediately. Others appear confused, some frightened.
Taz knows this is his best opportunity to reach whatever survivors there might be. There's a part of him that realizes he could escape now, make a new life for himself, find a new tribe. And if it weren't for his wife and daughter, he might. But he can't stomach the thought of leaving them. And so he does his best to sneak back into the village, hoping that his charge has drawn enough bandits to the other side of the village, maybe even into the forest.
The village is quiet now. From above, it looks empty. But sounds can be heard coming from under a raised roof, stable-like structure near the longhouse. When we cut down to it, we can see dozens of goblins crammed into cages. The bodies of the wolves who once called it home, filled with arrows and discarded in a heap to the side. We see the shape of Taz, hugged to a corner of the longhouse, trying to keep his eye out for any sign of life, of a threat, or a target.
Once he feels safe, Taz will make his way carefully to where the sounds are coming from. Although he can't see them yet, he recognizes the voices and sounds as belonging to his people. His heart pounds so hard he can feel it beat in his ears. He's brave, for a goblin anyway, and the best scientist in town, but he was never much of a hunter or a daredevil, especially for a goblin, and the thought haunts him as he crosses the open space between the longhouse and the kennels.
Taz, what are you doing here?
His wife cries out when she sees him. She's in the corner of a cage stuffed so full that there is no room to sit or lay. Their daughter is standing next to her, turned into her, face pressed against her mother's belly.
I couldn't leave, I'm sorry, he says. Goblins are survivors. Survivors in a world hell-bent on killing them, and it is a goblin's duty to survive, no matter what it costs them.
Taz, you have to leave, right now.
She is desperate, searching the space behind her husband, her eyes wide with terror and disbelief.
30 seconds. Taz says, fumbling through the contents of his satchel. His fingers are shaking now. He can barely work his way through the variety of tools, tinctures, and oils he carries.
That's 30 seconds you don't have, I'm afraid.
A new voice, low and casual, calls out. Only then does Taz become aware of the shadow that's been cast over him.
The others thought you might be trying to escape. I didn't think so. Too much work. Too many tells. Someone who had time to set that up, I figured they had time to slip away. Quietly, if that was their goal.
Taz's blood runs cold, and he stops suddenly, turning to see the source of the voice.
As Taz turns, he sees a tall, slender human male standing in the empty space of the stall door. He has exceedingly long, brown hair and wears a long coat, black leather armor beneath it. He has a large hat with a brim so wide that it sags at the edges. There is a melancholy to his eyes and smile that almost served to disarm Taz.
Taz backs up against the kennel, fumbling now through his satchel. He knows he has another bomb in here somewhere, but his fingers are slick with sweat and shaking with panic.
See, folk run or they fight back, but they don't often do both.
The man moves inside, crouching so that he's closer to eye level with Taz.
Men like them, they don't think critically, you see. Goblins run. That's what they do. And so those men assume you ran. But I take the world as it comes to me.
Taz manages to find the vial he's looking for and pulls it from the satchel. He's going to throw it at the man, even though he knows he's too close and he can get burned as well.
The man catches Taz's arm before he manages to draw it all the way back. and the force of his grip belies his slight frame. Taz cries out in pain, and the vial falls harmlessly to the ground. See, I didn't come out here to make a friend. Look what I found. You and me, we're gonna be pals. The best of them. Roll Bravely is a fan production featuring the Pathfinder 2nd Edition role-playing system and is created for entertainment purposes only. All characters, adventures, and interpretations of game mechanics are our own creation and do not represent official Pathfinder content. Pathfinder and all related trademarks are owned by Paizo Inc. We are not affiliated with nor endorsed by Paizo Inc. Game content may include fantasy violence, mature themes, and improvised gameplay that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Thank you for listening, and please join us next time as we roll bravely on.